The headlines, multiple casualties are reported following an explosion outside a military airport in the Afghan capital, Kabul. Iran's air defenses warn off a manned and unmanned foreign aircraft flying near the area of large-scale military drills. Russia's President Vladimir Putin says the West lied about peace and was preparing for aggression, provoking Russia to launch its military operation in Ukraine. Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. Afghanistan is reporting an explosion outside the military airport in the capital, Kabul. The spokesman for the Afghan ministry says the blast caused civilian casualties, but he did not specify the exact number. The cause of the explosion was not immediately clear, and an investigation is underway. The military airport is close to the Taliban Interior Ministry building. In the past few months, Afghanistan has witnessed an increasing number of security incidents, including explosions. Just 3 days ago, several people were injured in a blast that rocked the capital of the northern Tahar province. The Iranian Army's air defense units have warned off several foreign spy aircraft flying near the area of the ongoing exercises in the Persian Gulf. Now, that is according to a statement by the media headquarters of the drills. The development came after a number of manned and unmanned foreign aircraft tried to approach the area of the drills to collect intelligence. In response, the Iranian army units launched a Qatar drone after issuing radio warnings, forcing the intruding aircraft to leave the area. According to the statement, the Iranian air defense radars detected the foreign aircraft at an altitude of 23,000 feet. The Qatar drone is a turbojet-powered unmanned combat aircraft capable of delivering payloads comparable to manned aircraft. The Iranian army is staging large-scale exercises in the Sea of Oman and north of the Indian Ocean. The drills are aimed at testing domestically built military equipment and enhancing the country's preparedness against potential threats.
It's the second day of massive naval maneuvers conducted by the Iranian army. Codenamed Zulfaghar, the drill covers over a 3 million square kilometer area, stretching from the Strait of Hormuz all the way to the Sea of Oman and north of the Indian Ocean.
Self-reliance, power, and sustainable security is the slogan of this drill. Here we seek to enhance our military might using our own homegrown armaments. The ultimate objective is to achieve lasting peace and security of our country and our region.
During the second phase of the military exercise, domestically made combat drones such as Arash and Bavar flew from the Sahand destroyer to hit mock enemy targets using the homegrown Ghaem smart bombs made by Iran's armed forces. Ghaem is a guided bomb with a pinpoint accuracy of less than half a meter. Equipped with an infrared seeker, the precision-guided bomb can engage with fixed and moving targets, both at night and during the day.
Arm bombs, precision-guided missiles, and combat drones are used and will be used in the upcoming phases of the drill. What's important is that all these cutting-edge military equipment are designed and developed by our experts. So the message is that we are now capable of producing a wide array of hardware needed to protect our country.
Iran's military sector has been one of the industries that's been subject to decades-long sanctions imposed by the West. The army says this has prompted Iran to keep its defense industry afloat by drawing on local expertise. Military officials say today Iran produces over 80% of its needed equipment on its own. Military officials here say this drill helps Iran's naval forces to upgrade their preparedness for real-time operations. The ultimate goal, they say, is to ensure peace and stability in regional waters, which they say are constantly exposed to extraterritorial threats. Yusuf Jalali from the location of the drills.
And the Iranian Foreign Ministry has organized a specialized forum on the role of the late commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, in combating terrorism. During his meeting, dubbed the Specialized Forum on Fighting Terrorism and Extremism in West Asia, guests and attendees from different Iranian institutions and bodies discuss the fight on terror from different perspectives. Mahdi Abbasian reports.
The Center for Political and International Studies of the Iranian Foreign Ministry has organized a specialized roundtable focusing on the fight against terrorism and extremism in the West Asia region. Guests and attendees from different Iranian institutions and bodies took part in the forum, which concentrated on efforts made by the Iranian anti-terror commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Among the most significant topics discussed during the meeting were fighting terrorism in the West Asia region from the point of view of international law, the role of General Soleimani in fighting terrorism in the West Asia region, and the role of the United Nations in fight on terror in the West Asia region. On the sidelines of the meeting, Iran's former ambassador to Iraq, Iraj Masjidi, highlighted the late commander's role in neutralizing terrorist groups in neighboring countries.
When Lieutenant General Soleimani was assassinated, I was working as the ambassador of the Islamic Republic of Iran to Iraq. He would frequently travel to Iraq in order to confront the ISIS terrorist group and help the Iraqi armed forces and Hashd al-Sha'bi with planning and logistic support. In other words, he played a prominent role in Iraq in the fight against terrorists.
Masjidi also said that efforts to bring a prosecution against those involved in the assassination of General Soleimani continues. In this regard, the head of a special Iranian committee tasked with pursuing the case of General Soleimani's assassination in domestic and international courts said an indictment on the assassination will be announced soon.
The UN report that described the assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani as unlawful and arbitrary has made persecution of this crime easier for us. It clearly holds the U.S. accountable for committing this crime and violating international law. The Foreign Ministry and the Ministry of Justice have also made efforts based on the 1973 Convention, and the results will be announced soon.
He was referring to a report by a UN expert on extrajudicial killings concluding that the targeting of General Soleimani and those accompanying him constitute an arbitrary killing for which the U.S. is responsible.
Iran has had a significant role in the fight against terrorism in the West Asia region, particularly in Iraq and Syria. And Iran's top anti-terror commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, played a pivotal role in combating terrorism and defeating Daesh. Mahdi Abbasian, Tehran.
Welcome to another edition of the News Review. In this edition, South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol says his country's military should decisively retaliate against what he called Pyongyang's provocations. In a phone call with the military chiefs, Yoon said that the army needs mental readiness and practical training for this purpose. He warned that North Korea would continue to conduct nuclear and missile tests. On Sunday, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un called for an exponential increase in the country's nuclear arsenal and ordered the development of new nuclear-capable intercontinental ballistic missiles to counter U.S.-led threats. He slammed the constant deployment of U.S. nuclear strike assets in South Korea, saying that Washington and Seoul are trying to isolate and stifle Pyongyang. His remarks came hours after the North fired a short-range ballistic missile off its east coast. Pyongyang conducted an unprecedented number of such tests in 2022. To discuss that further, we're joined by our correspondent in Seoul, Frank Smith, and also Hindo Shu, senior fellow at the Pangol Institution of Beijing. Thank you very much to both of you gentlemen for joining us. Let's begin with Frank. And, well, there seems to be escalation in the tensions between the North and the South. Frank, if you could please elaborate what has led to the situation that we're in right now.
Well, we have a new president here in South Korea. Yoon Suk-yeol came to power in May. He promised to take a hard line with North Korea and respond to any missile testing or potential nuclear testing that was undertaken by Pyongyang and leader Kim Jong-un. Largely in response to that, also as part of its ongoing deterrence development, North Korea tested a record number of missiles in 2022. Here in the South, part of Yoon's response was to ramp up joint South Korea-U.S. military exercises, and we saw that throughout 2022, especially toward the end of the year, as we saw more missile tests from North Korea. Yoon has also called for the deployment of U.S. strategic weapons that we saw here. Those are U.S. weapons capable of carrying a nuclear bomb to send a message to North Korea that the South was and the U.S. was ready to respond to North Korea's so-called provocations. Also last Monday, North Korea, according to South Korea's Joint Chiefs of Staff, North Korea sent 5 drones across the DMZ, that's the border between North Korea and South Korea. One of those drones even made it to the skies over the outskirts of the capital, Seoul. This proved to be a big embarrassment to South Korea. And then the South Korean military, sort of in response to that, sent up a rocket, a solid fuel rocket, a few days later to demonstrate it was going to be working on its reconnaissance and surveillance capabilities with the growing development of rockets that could place a satellite into orbit and spy on North Korea. So we're probably going to see this type of, tit-for-tat military drills and missile launches and the like from North Korea and South Korea now that we have a conservative hardline president here in the South.
Very nicely mentioned by Frank Smith, Mr. Shu. If you could please tell us what you think about this tit-for-tat that is ongoing right now, and now we have Kim Jong-un clearly specifying that he will support the development of a nuclear-capable weapons, as you may. Tell us what you think.
Yes, I think the North side, they have been listening and looking at the policies from Washington. New regime there, the Biden administration, which is a bit different from Donald Trump, which chose to talk to the North Korean side directly. And then in South Korea, there is a new government since May, half a year ago. And this new government also took a hotline policy toward the North. So here we have a conclusion, from North Korean points of view that South Korea is an enemy and the U.S. is increasingly hostile toward North Korea with the deployment of more military assets, including F-22 fighter jets, B-1 bombers, and not long ago, the U.S. has activated its space force for the first time in the foreign soil in South Korea. That's all against North Korea. So I think here the conclusion from North Korean point of view, yes, we are facing an increasing threat from South Korea and its ally, the United States. So that's what we are going to do for the next the year and beyond. That's more tests and more development of their nuclear weapons, in particular this tactical nuclear weapons. So for deterrence and also for defending the country, they are not shy in saying that they could put the nuclear weapons into first use if they fail to deter a war from other sides. So yes, as a conclusion, that's also a forward-looking plan of what they are going to do, to face the two sides, South Korea and the U.S. If you look, of course, you can do the analysis about the purpose, but anyway, that's what we get from the message here.
Thank you very much. Our correspondent Frank Smith joining us from Seoul, and also Hindo Shu, a senior fellow at the Pangol Institution of Beijing. Thanks for sharing your thoughts and views with us on this edition of the News Review. China has accused the U.S. of misleading public opinion. And that is after Washington said a Chinese fighter jet came dangerously close to an American military plane in regional waters. The Defense Ministry in Beijing said American aircraft breached international law by flying near China's Paracel Islands. The ministry says the fighter ignored repeated warnings to leave the area and made dangerous approaches that endangered the safety of Chinese aircraft. The U.S. military has been conducting maneuvers near the artificial islands in Beijing, has been constructing them in the South China Sea. China claims almost the entire body of water, but parts of it are contested by littoral states such as Vietnam and Malaysia. Russia's President Vladimir Putin says the West lied about peace and was preparing for aggression, provoking Russia to launch its military operation in Ukraine. He made these remarks in a New Year's message that is aimed at rallying Russian people behind the troops. Putin also described the war as a near existential fight for the future of Russia. He said 2022 was a year of difficult and necessary decisions. The Russian president pledged victory over Ukraine's, quote, neo-Nazis, accusing the West of being bent on destroying Russia. Putin rejected Ukraine's calls for Russian troops to leave as a precursor to peace negotiations. He added that Russian troops are defending the people of Russia and its historical territory. Putin also slammed the opponents of the war at home, saying it has separated courage from cowardice. The Ukrainian president also issued a New Year message. Volodymyr Zelensky said 2023 will be about one thing, which is victory.
And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Tell a little about yourself.
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old, and I'm a student of 6. My dad, who taught me the art of writing.
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to another edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, January 1st, 2023. I'm Atefe Erfani, hosting this program today. And on behalf of all IRIB English Radio staff, I congratulate you on the new year 2023. We wish you peace, joy, love, and good tidings on the occasion of the new year 2023. And as you may know, Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our programs. Tell us which program or programs you like the best. And if you have any message for our great listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, your favorite program, and we've received piles of letters and emails from around the world, which I mentioned some of your names here, and later during the program, I will read these letters and emails. Before the program, I was just reviewing these letters and emails from around the world, and most of them focus on the new year greetings and congratulations. Yes, we've received an email from Guatemala from Osman Adrian Ramos. Jayanta Chakrabarty from India has sent us an email. From Germany, we've received an email from Klaus Hober. Richard Cook from the UK has sent us an email. Dario Gabrielli from Italy also has sent us an email, and we've received congratulation messages from Heike Pranen from Finland, Alejandro Filimonchak from Argentina, and P.S. Sekar from India. Stay with us, please. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and let's see what Osman Adrian Ramos from Guatemala has said. Thank you very much for your good wishes. I send you greetings from Guatemala, where I occasionally listen to you when propagation conditions allow it. Happy New Year 2023 to all the listeners of IRIB English Radio. Salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Osman Adrian Ramos from Guatemala, please accept our warm appreciations to you for this email. Actually, we Iranians celebrate the beginning of the new year in spring, on the first day of spring, on the first day of the Iranian month of Farvardin. But we congratulate you on the new year 2023, and we wish you all the best. Osman Adrian Ramos from Guatemala, we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon, and my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL as verification. Thank you, Osman, from Guatemala. And from India, we've received an email from Jayanta Chakrabarty, one of our old and regular listeners. Let's see what Jayanta says. Dear staff, I sincerely thank IRIB English Service for giving me an opportunity to discuss on the New Year celebrations in India. just like Iran, India is also a multicultural country where people from different backgrounds live in peace, love, and harmony. I offer my New Year greetings for my fellow listeners of IRIB and to all the peace-loving people of Iran. May the coming New Year 2023 be joyful, healthy, and prosperous for all. With kind regards from India. Jayanta Chakrabarty from India, salam, and warm greetings to you in the winter days, in the cold winter days, actually, and Happy New Year 2023 to you. Thank you for your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio, as well as Iranians and our listeners around the world. We wish you peace, love, joy, and good tidings on the New Year 2023. And Jayanta Chakrabarty from India, thank you very much. We are looking forward to hearing from you soon, and we wish you all the best. And after a short break, I will be back with you. Welcome back. We've received an email from Germany from Klaus Huber. Let's see what Klaus Huber says. Dear friends of IRIB English Radio, the very best for Christmas and a good new year also to you and all the listeners. As for me, I am Catholic priest, so I have some celebrations for holidays, especially with young people who get dressed as magicians and go from house to house and collect money for children living in poor countries. I have sent you a reception report. It would be great if you confirm it. Salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran, and thank you for writing to IRIB English Radio. On behalf of all IRIB English Radio staff, I also congratulate you on the Christmas and New Year 2023, Klaus Huber from Germany, and thank you for sharing your experiences during the New Year and Christmas with us and with our great listeners around the world. As for your information, dear listeners, we in Iran celebrate the New Year at the beginning of spring and the Iranian month of Farvardin. We celebrate the beginning of the new year on Farvardin 1st. We call it Nowruz. You may have heard about it. Anyway, we wish you all the best and we are looking forward to hearing from you soon. And please accept our EQSL as confirmation. And here we've received an email from the UK from Richard Cook, one of our regular listeners. Let's see what he says. Good evening and hope all is well there. My new year is actually quiet, but I do hear fireworks and some boat horns around the area in the UK being close to the sea. My reception is very rare these days as there is like only two English broadcasts a day now. Both are hard to catch. I hope I can pick you up again soon. Salam and greetings to you, Richard Cook from the UK, and thank you for sharing your New Year experiences with us. So you celebrate Christmas and the New Year quietly, and you sometimes just hear fireworks and some boat horns around the area in the UK being close to the sea, and that's good. And what a pity you had trouble in tuning in to IRIB English Radio. We are so sorry about that, but if the problem is on our behalf, we will fix it soon. Yes, we will refer to our technicians and engineers, and we will fix it soon anyway. We wish you a very happy New Year 2023, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And please accept our EQSL as verification. Welcome back from Italy. As I said, we've received an email from Dario Gabrielli, one of our old and regular listeners. Dario Gabrielli says, "Dear friends of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting, it is with great pleasure that I received your New Year's greetings, which I reciprocate from the bottom of my heart. Unfortunately, I have not been able to listen to your English language programs recently, but I promise that I will soon start listening and send you the listening reports, which I hope you will receive. Thank you, and I send you and all the listeners my greetings and my best wishes for a happy 2023. Salam, ciao. Greetings to you, Dario Gabrielli from Italy. And thank you very much for this email and also your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. We wish you listen to IRIB English Radio station very soon. And maybe you were busy during the Christmas and preparing for Christmas. Anyway, we wish you a happy 2023. And we're looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And as I said, we've received piles of letters and emails from around the world focusing on New Year celebrations and greetings, which I will read some of them. For example, Heikki Pranen from Finland has said, "Hello to all the listeners to IRIB English Radio, and Joe, we wish you a joyful New Year 2023. With best regards and have a prosperous New Year 2023. Thank you, Heikki Puranen from Finland. And Alejandro Filimonchuk from Argentina has sent us a New Year message saying, "Thank you very much for the New Year message. We celebrate New Year almost the same as Christmas with our family, and we dine and celebrate it together, of course, with a lot of fireworks. I am in Argentina. Happy New Year." Thank you, Alejandro Filimonchuk from Argentina, and Happy New Year 2023. And the last one from P.S. Sikar from India, "Best wishes for a happy and prosperous New Year 2023 to all." Thank you, P.S. Sikar from India. Dear listeners, before wrapping up this edition of Listeners Special, on behalf of all IRIB English Radio staff, I congratulate you on the New Year 2023, and we wish you peace, joy, love, and good tidings in New Year 2023. We wish you all the best. God bless you, and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story. In
what is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The UN General Assembly has asked the International Court of Justice to consider consequences for Israel over its occupation of Palestinian territories. The rights of the Palestinian people to self-determination, as well as Israeli measures aimed at altering the demographic composition, character, and the status of Al-Quds were put into focus. This comes as the Israeli coalition, headed by Netanyahu, has already stated that it would go ahead with things like illegal settlement building and altering Al-Quds status. In this edition of the Spotlight, we will look at whether this move by the UNGA would make any difference and change the facts on the ground. First, let me introduce our guests for this edition of the program. Brad Hughes is a journalist, activist, and director at Palestine Aid Belfast, who joins us from Belfast. Also joining us, Zafar Bangash, director at the Institute of Contemporary Islamic Thought, who joins us from Toronto.
Is the Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to the Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome to you both. Farah Hughes, first over to you. So taking a look at the timing of this is pretty interesting. You have one day after you have this most extreme right, if you want to call it that, it could be worse in terms of the description of Netanyahu's coalition that was introduced, which was accompanied by lots of high fives. I've never seen so many high fives and hugs at the Knesset as I did when I saw that happening. And then you have the UNGA asking the ICC to consider consequences for Israel, for its occupation of Palestinians and the violations, obviously, as a result of that. What do you think?
Well, I think the timing could be coincidental. I think what we'll have to really look at is Israel's compliance with previous UN resolutions. I mean, if we look back to 1949, when you had UN Resolution 194, which enshrined the right of return of the Palestinian refugees, to date, Israel has disputed and refuses to acknowledge the right of Palestinians to return to their homes. Then you have the UN Resolution 497 on the Golan Heights. Then you have the illegal occupation of the West Bank. And we have Israel in breach of the Fourth Geneva Convention, because under that convention, they are not allowed to move their civilian population into the occupied territories. So there are now over 800,000, or perhaps maybe as many as 1 million illegal settlers in the West Bank. And the other thing that I thought about when I thought about the ICC is Israel has not signed up to the Statutes of Rome, as far as I'm aware, and they are not party to the ICC, the International Criminal Court, and neither is America. And when the Freedom Flotilla tried to sail with medical aid from Turkey to Gaza in 2010, the Mavi Marmara was stormed by the Israeli naval commandos in international water. 10 Turkish citizens were murdered, 50 were injured, and more people brutalized and arrested. Now, when the ICC, in tandem with the Turkish authorities, launched kind of preliminary bilateral investigations, the Turkish government and judiciary ordered the arrest warrants for four commanders of the Israeli army and the Israeli navy who were responsible for this tragic war crime at sea. Yet the ICC decided that there was not enough evidence to secure a conviction against any of those involved. And indeed, 10 years later, when the country that the boat was registered to, or the company, again asked for an independent open investigation, the ICC said that while mistakes were made by their own investigator and things could have been handled far better, that investigator was still refusing to open a new investigation. So, you know, bringing Israel before the ICC, when Western Europe and America, there's no European government and no administration in America that wants to see Israel condemned for its war crimes.
Well, that's the problem that we're going to hopefully try to get an answer to, which I'm sure we won't, but at least we're going to try. Zafar Bagash, one of the important points that our guest, Farahiz, makes is that Israel is not a party to the Rome Statute, and therefore it's the statute that established the ICC, so therefore, by definition, it can't be a party to that court. Obviously, this is a very well-known fact. Then why go ahead with first the announcement that the UNGA made in terms of referring Israel to the ICC?
Well, first of all, we need to understand that with respect to the General Assembly vote, it is a welcome step. At least it spotlights Israel's criminal activities. I think we also need to be clear that the General Assembly vote has not referred Israel to the ICC. It is to ICJ, the International Court of Justice, which is an arm of the United Nations. And it has asked for a ruling from the International Court of Justice regarding Israel's continued illegal settlements on the West Bank, as well as Israel's plans to occupy the whole of Al-Quds, Jerusalem. Although it is in physical occupation, but its legal occupation has not been recognized by the world at large. There are only maybe one or two countries that have recognized it. What is also important to keep in mind is that obviously, even if the International Court of Justice gives its ruling against the Zionists or the Zionist regime in occupied Palestine, practically it would have very little effect because the International Court of Justice has no enforcement mechanism at its disposal. If we keep in mind that the Security Council itself, which is a body whose resolutions are enforceable, there are at least 70 UN Security Council resolutions condemning Israel that managed to escape a U.S. veto, because the U.S. Applies its veto immediately as soon as there is any resolution that is critical of the Zionist regime.
Why do you think that is? Why does the U.S. do that?
Because Israel is a colonial settler entity, exactly like the United States is, Canada is, Britain is, France, these regimes are Australia. If you look at history, all of these countries, their citizens went to these other lands, to North America, where they perpetrated a genocide against the indigenous population, or they sent some of their people, the criminals actually, from Britain to Australia, where they perpetrated a genocide against the indigenous population there. So they decimated the native populations over there to establish U.S., Canada, Australia, etc. And Israel is doing or trying to do exactly the same, although I think it's not going to succeed in actually carrying out a genocide of the Palestinian people because the world has changed tremendously in the last, 70, 80 years. So in that sense, while we should not be surprised by these Western regimes supporting the Zionist colonial settler entity, but the world situation is gradually changing. And I personally feel that I think a time will come when the resistance of the Palestinian people in combination with other resistance forces will be able to bring to an end this racist Zionist ideology and establish some kind of a structure, legal structure in Palestine where all people can live in peace as equal citizens.
We'll see. Well, hopefully the turn of the year may have some optimism in it, but not as far as Palestinians are concerned regarding this new administration. Farahiz, this is what Benjamin Netanyahu has said about what happened at the UNGA and his referral. Quote, what he has said, the Jewish people are not occupiers on their own land, nor occupiers in our eternal capital, Jerusalem, and no UN resolution can warp that historical truth in which he called what has happened despicable. Now, when I started out, my first question with you, I asked about the timing. Now, this resolution from the UNGA is focusing on a couple things that are very important. The right of return is one of them, and of course, the status of Al-Quds, the legal consequences arising from the violations of the right of return, the Palestinian people to self-determination, and of course the status of Al-Quds. Now, we know right from the get-go this new administration has said, we're going to go ahead with those two. We're not going to allow the right of return. We're going to go ahead with changing the status quo of Al-Quds. So what do you think of that statement coming from the administration and then for this UNGA coming out with a resolution a day after? Is it a signal that they're sending in terms of to Israel that, you know, you should stop from going ahead with those two issues and maybe a lot more?
I'm going to say no, absolutely not, because I feel that what we're witnessing is just a continuation of Israeli governmental policy. The Zionists back in the day didn't have a 5-year, 10-year, 20-year plan. They had a 100-year plan, and that 100-year plan was to ethnically cleanse Palestine of its civilian population. And that's exactly what they're doing. I have been in Jerusalem. I have seen the Judification of the city. I have climbed on top of a building and seen nothing but Israeli flags going along the skyline. So, you know, we can say that maybe some of the backers of Israel were all against this coming forward, this kind of investigation, which is only an opinion, which carries no weight outside of its implementation. So, you know, so who did instigate this? Who did bring this forward, and why have they done that? If we are moving possibly into a more multipolar world, you may have China, you may have India, you may have Russia, you may have countries in Latin America lining up to defend and back the people of Palestine, and indeed a one state or two state solution where everyone is treated equally under the law. But the only thing I'll say to that is, as has already been stated, if you are a Native American and you're living in America, you are not treated same under the law. If you're a black person born in America, you're an American citizen, you're not treated with the same effect and respect as white people under the law. If you're an Aborigine in Australia, you know, up until the 1950s, they were having what they called Abu hunts, where they actually went out and targeted and rode down and hunted Aboriginal men and their families because they were treated as fauna and flora right up until the 1950s. So, you know, you could have a one-state solution tomorrow, but I don't believe Palestinians would receive any justice under an Israeli government and under the Israeli judiciary. And indeed, the what they call the Arab Palestinians living in Israel are already second-class citizens. So I don't see any difference whatsoever. I think this is a continuation. And the further right that the... Don't forget, it might be the most farther right government that Israel has ever had. But that's what the people have elected. The people there and the settler movement have elected that government into place in order to promote and to hasten and to quicken the settlement programs, including the Golan Heights in Syria. So
sure.
If the UN has no teeth, why would Netanyahu or anybody else be concerned?
Let's take a look at the way this voting panned out, Zafar Bangash. And I'm going to go first with the ones who oppose the resolution, the United States, Britain, and Germany. France sustained. Now, if we take a look at the fact that they oppose the resolution, and if we take a look at the fact that they know what this new administration has said that it's going to do on a couple of the core issues, first off, as I mentioned, Al-Aqsa, and also when you talk about the right of return, and we know how they're going to go about the settlements, that's not even any doubt there, then doesn't that, in essence, show that right from the beginning you have these three countries, in particular the U.S., who's not going to oppose anything that Israel does when it comes to these three issues and probably a lot more when it comes to what's happening on the ground?
Well, absolutely. You can look at the countries, as you mentioned, that have voted against this General Assembly resolution, the U.S., Britain, Germany, Austria, Canada, altogether 26 countries, but, you know, some of these countries are basically not even, they're not even fit to be called countries. Countries like, Micronesia and Polynesia, et cetera, Macau, these are just islands with a flag. But the U.S. is able to bring these countries along because they depend on the U.S. But your point is absolutely valid, that the U.S. simply is not prepared to do anything that is legal, that is moral, that should be adhered to, even though the U.S.
I'm sorry, I'm going to jump in and rephrase my question and tell you, doesn't that mean that it's a green light at the same time? If you're going against the resolution, aren't you given a green light at the same time?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's exactly what it is. And I think we can go back actually into history when the General Assembly actually voted back in 1948 to create the State of Israel. Even at that time, I mean, there were only 57 members of the United Nations body at that time. And that vote had to be postponed three times in order for the U.S. to exert pressure on other countries to bring them on board so that they would have the requisite number of votes in order to partition Palestine into the Israeli state and a Palestinian state. That resolution itself was totally illegal because the Palestinian people themselves were never consulted about it. The Palestinians constituted a vast majority of the population, more than 70%. Only 30% of the population of Palestine at the time was of Jewish origin, and yet even this population had been brought in illegally into Palestine. So we see that right from the word go, Israel's creation is illegal, number one. Secondly, if you want to talk about the General Assembly itself, when Resolution 194, as the guest from Ireland pointed out, when that resolution was presented, it was basically Israel's credentials were accepted by the General Assembly on the condition that the Palestinians would have a right of return. Now, today, Israel is in illegal, it's occupying the seat at the General Assembly or the UN illegally because it has not fulfilled that resolution. And it is openly rejecting that resolution. It wants to go ahead and ethnically cleanse Palestine. So Israel cannot even be in the United Nations at this time if you want to talk about legality. But unfortunately, the world does not function according to legality. It functions on the basis of might is right. And since Israel has the weapons and the wherewithal and the support of the Western regimes, so it continues to oppress the Palestinian people. So the answer to this barbarity is that the rest of the world has to get together, those that believe in human rights, that believe in human dignity, that they should confront this monstrosity. And I think the time is coming when this monstrosity would be confronted and put in its place. And this racist ideology of Zionism would be obliterated, just as apartheid was removed from South Africa in our own lifetime. And I think this is something that the direction that we really need to pursue, and that is what would bring justice to the Palestinian people. So currently, of course, the U.S. Sure. is giving a green light to the Zionists to continue their practice, illegal practices of ethnic cleansing and illegal occupation of the West Bank and Al-Quds.
Okay, so obviously Zafar Bangash Shadar Farahi says something that we all love to know what the solution would be. So if we're looking at the UN, we can't. I don't know if it was you or Zafar Bangash said, I think Zafar Bangash said that over 70 UN resolutions, Israel doesn't even heed to them. If you're looking at the ICC, ICJ, forget it. They're not a signatory. If we're looking to the U.S., Britain, Germany, no, we can't look at them. What are we left with in terms of countering this? I mean, at this point, we know what the new administration is going to do. I don't think there's going to be any doubts as to how they're going to go about business as usual for them and to the extreme now from what we're seeing at this point. Then how can this be countered? Because I'm just looking at one instance in Muharram this past year where you had 150 Palestinians brutally beaten up in clashes that happened at Al-Aqsa. I'm sure there's going to be, and that could lead to a war. That's going to lead to deaths. Israel itself, its security is going to be threatened by the types of actions it's going to partake in. So what can be done?
Well, I think there's several questions all rolled into one there. I think firstly, one of the things we might look at is the inability of the UN because of the Security Council members to actually implement war crime tribunals against people like Tony Blair and George Bush and even Bill Clinton. These people are mass murderers, and yet they're able to walk the streets with impunity. So, you know, before we go looking at Israel and holding individual soldiers to account for their war crimes, we should be looking at these other world political leaders that are drenched, their hands are drenched in blood. you know, we could talk about the accents of resistance. We could talk about Yemen. We could talk about Iran. We could talk about Syria. We could talk about Lebanon. But every single one of those countries right now is under huge pressure. Lebanon is being bombarded with a financial crisis created by America. You have the partitioning of Syria and the theft of the wheat and the oil. You have the people in Yemen being bombed daily by the people in Saudi, by the regime in Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. And, you know, like Palestine is under like illegal coercive, unilateral coercive siege in Gaza, and Palestinians are being murdered every day in Palestine. So what could the accents of resistance do? It could probably do quite a lot if it was fully united, which it appears to be. But there would need to be a spark in order to bring all those different branches together. But I think it's a multipolar world going forward that will bring Israel to account in the moral world court, and that Russia and China,
okay,
and perhaps South America can make a difference.
Let me give 30 seconds, if you can, Zafar Bangash. Quite telling that you had, aside from the abstentions and the ones voting against, that you had virtually unanimous support when it came to some of the Arab states that have actually normalized relations with Israel with this. How do you think, how does that reflect on them when they've done that, even though they've normalized ties with Israel? 30 seconds, please.
Well, as far as these regimes are concerned, unfortunately, they play both sides of the fence, but they have realized that their masses, as we saw in the World Cup in Qatar, that the Arab masses came out overwhelmingly in support of Palestine. In fact, the biggest winner at the World Cup was Palestine. And so in that sense, I think that's a good omen, but I don't think that we should hold much hope from these Arab regimes, because they themselves are illegitimate. They have no right to exist because they don't have the support of their masses. So I don't think that we should hold much hope from them.
Thank you very much, Zafar Bangash, Director of the Institute of Contemporary Islamic Thought from Toronto. Fra Hughes, journalist, activist, and director of the Palestine Aid Belfast from Belfast. Thank you to you both. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikova Tagwe and the team, it's goodbye.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.